out in the spring. The technology actually scans palm vein patterns underneath the skin. The company claims it is more secure than fingerprints because there are no traces for someone to replicate, and the scanning requires blood flow for a proper read. So you can't use a severed hand.
Mm-hmm.
It has to, or you'd have to pump some blood through it or something like that. So the company actually addresses the issue of security involving a severed hand. The company states in its frequently asked questions, "Firstly, we hope that this will never happen. However, even if someone somehow got away with sneaking a chopped off hand into any store," which, you know, clearly immediately comes to mind True Smart. Doesn't it? You'd be back there by where the little single serve milks are and just see like a severed hand just sitting in the. But anyway, so if someone somehow got away with sneaking a chopped off hand into any store, they wouldn't be able to use it at checkout due to the lack of blood flow in the severed hand. So it's better than like a thumbprint. It's a minute and a half after the hour of one right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. The Pulse Wallet also says it can function like a normal credit swiping system if users or merchants choose to opt out on registering their biometric profile. Pulse Wallet. It's technology for you.
Does the Pulse Wallet have a little trademark by it?
Not in that article, it did not. So Google Glass has a new app that can allow strangers to identify you just by looking at you based upon all the information that's out there on the internet about you. There's so much information out there about you, about everyone. And now there's a company looking to people's veins as a way to identify them. It's more secure than fingerprints. Your vein structure right underneath the top layer of your skin on your hand has more of a unique profile than your fingerprints do. And more technology news. And this is something we're going to see a lot more of, I guarantee you. The FAA is investigating a possible illegal use of a drone at a fatal crash scene in Hartford, Connecticut.
I saw that.
According to the report, officers spotted a drone flying over the scene of the crash in which bodies were still in the car. And there's privacy concerns here. Drones, which are also known as unmanned aerial systems, are seeing an uptick in popularity as they're used by the U.S. government and even the subject of plans by online retailer Amazon for use in shipping products. The drone controversy here is emerging in Hartford, has the FAA on alert because its use may have been illegal. The police report says that on Saturday, February the 1st, officers spotted the drone overhead with an attached camera. Police say they questioned the man operating the drone, but no arrest was made. The FAA declined to comment, but did confirm it has launched an investigation. Drones, not being helicopters, they're much smaller, can have access to aerial places that traditional helicopters and airplanes do not. But it's just like when Amazon said that we are going to start doing, I mean, they have the two-day Prime thing where people get mouthwash and Right Guard sent to their houses for free because they're Amazon Prime members. And then they were going to have Amazon Drone where they would send quadcopters with your mouthwash and your Right Guard, not in 2 days, but in like 30 minutes. And that was what Amazon was saying. And then the CEO and founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, said that a day before Black Friday, or Cyber Monday, excuse me, because he said it on 60 Minutes, and that's where they announced it. And then people started thinking, well, maybe this is just a PR move, because clearly it got a lot of people's attention. But then you start thinking that if anyone were to do something like that,
it'd be Pizza Hut.
No, it would be Amazon. I mean, maybe, you know, Amazon's got deeper pockets than Pizza Hut, I bet.
Maybe.
And Amazon's got a bunch of.
I'm sure you can get a Pizza Hut on Amazon.
You probably could. No, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
With the 2-day shipping. But they do it, and then all of a sudden, they can sell that technology to anyone that wants it, to local law enforcement. I mean, like a city enforcing codes, people trying to do, you know, private investigation. Because Amazon could hurdle those legal challenges, because there is going to be a lot, just like this case shows. The FAA is involved. People want to know what's going on. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, it's awfully disrespectful, you know, and that's what people always do at the scene of an accident. They want to slow down and look and see what's going on. But to have a drone flying overhead and it be a fatal accident, there being deceased people in these cars and some guy just flying a drone overhead. The drone is on.
Well, I mean, you know, at the beginning of every century, I've been reading a lot of stuff about the last century, and it's like, yeah, it's 2014 right now. By 2040, stuff's going to be so crazy that we're going to look back on this day today as being, you know, the good old days. I mean, the beginning of every century, there's a big jump in progress, they say.
Well, you know, this year is the 100-year anniversary of World War One, which mm-hmm. was a great advancement of progress.
The first post-industrial war.
Yeah, before World War One, you had to, reload your rifle after every shot was fired. I mean, you would march across a battlefield and attack an enemy face to face. I mean, before World War One, they didn't have chemical warfare. I mean, mustard gas was something that, you know, yeah, was not heard of yet. Yeah, warfare had not been industrialized. I mean, we have something like that to look forward to here, right? At the outset of the, I mean, second decade of the 21st century. I mean, I was watching a TV show that was from 2005 the other day, and it was kind of funny because they were talking on a flip phone, like a not smartphone, and they were showing somebody pictures, but they were like prints. They were real pictures.
Yeah.
And I just like got to thinking that just doesn't exist anymore. At all. I mean, who has prints and shows people real pictures?
One of my friends gave me a bunch of prints for Christmas.
Yeah, you're a weirdo, though, and some of your friends are even weirder than you are.
Yep.
But that's one of those things, though. It's just, it just seems so anachronistic now. But it was just 7 years ago.
It's funny to me how people
9 years
with
ago.
Flip phones are, you know. I'm one of those guys. I have a flip phone because I only use my phone to make phone calls. I use my computer to get on the internet. But I can't tell you how much slack I get from people. Like, oh, my God, look at Gilton with the flip phone. And it's just like, you know, and some of my friends have said things to me, too, like, you know, man, you're lucky. You're lucky, man, that you didn't get an iPhone. If I had never had an iPhone, I could probably have a flip phone like you. But don't ever get an iPhone, man, because once you have one, you'll never be able to not have one. I'm like, huh? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I.
It's a funny world out there. But it's like you're saying, 2005, that was almost 10 years ago. And it's just funny. I mean, think about back then, how many people didn't have cell phones yet. I still had a lot of friends back then that didn't have cell phones. In 1995, only my rich friends had cell phones, and it usually was their moms.
Yeah, nobody had a phone in 95.
Well,
doctors,
on the East Coast they did.
Lawyers, whoever. I mean, nobody had a phone 10 years ago. On the East Coast, we didn't have cell phones here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
We were still climbing on the side of a telephone pole
sure.
to make phone calls. Now, in 1995, people still had pagers in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something called a payphone that after you got a page, you go to the payphone.
Mm-hmm.
You'd make the phone call and be like, well, what's the big deal? Be like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you put 3 911s after your phone number.
Yo, can you pick up some milk?
Milk. That's also something they only have on the East Coast.
Yeah, milk.
You know, they don't have milk here.
Can you stop at the plaza and get some milk?
A story about terrorism. Headline is Judge Shields Evidence in Kansas Bomb Plot Case.
Wichita.
Does anyone remember that? That was last December, so just a couple months ago, in Wichita, Kansas. And an employee of the Wichita Regional Airport or something like that.
Why does all the weird stuff in Kansas happen down there?
In Wichita? Are you joking? Have you not ever been to Topeka? You don't think weird stuff happens in other parts of Kansas? You think it just happens in Wichita?
Well, they don't make headlines like they do there. I mean, just Westboro stuff. But in Wichita, they always make the big headlines, the national news.
Like Dr. Tiller, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, government evidence against a man accused of plotting a suicide bomb attack at a Kansas airport will be shielded from the public, a federal judge ruled on Friday. The judge granted the prosecution's request for a protective order in the case of Terry Lowen, a 58-year-old avionics technician charged with plotting to attack Wichita's Mid-Continent Airport. An avionics technician. Is that like being a dental technician? Do you go to Wright business schools to learn about avionic technicianing?
DeVry.
Is it a DeVry? You think it's that prestigious?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the ruling sets out procedures for the handling of sensitive evidence exchanged before the trial, resolving the government's fears that publicly disclosing evidence would expose its investigative methods and ultimately compromise their ability to stop future plots. Now, all right. So the government doesn't want any of the evidence of this guy having, because, you know, he wanted to drive a van laden with explosives into the Mid-Continent Airport down in Wichita because he was sympathetic to Al-Qaeda. I mean, this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to disrupt holiday travel or something like that. But it was on December 13th. They did it. I mean, I'm not sure how much holiday travel would have really ultimately been disrupted at that point on December 13th in Wichita, Kansas. But nevertheless, of course, he did not have a van full of explosives. When he tried to attack the Mid-Continent Airport, he had a van full of a bunch of dummy placebo inert explosives because this guy, like all the other guys and gals out there that get accused of terrorism in this country, are just FBI, you know, handled dupes that get convinced that they are going to blow up something important or do something terroristic or act out some bizarre and perverted fantasy at the help bequest with the full participation and cooperation of the Federal Bureau of Investigations from either an informant or a straight up agent. They started using agents in some of these. But the funny part, so this guy, and later on in the article it says that, no, it's funny. This article's been changed. They do that sometimes.
Been updated.
So he was allegedly tried to drive a van filled with inert explosives onto the airport tarmac, a plot prosecutors say was timed to cause maximum carnage at the height of the holiday travel season.
On the 13th.
On December 13th. Lowen has pled. Maybe that was that... I even think Hanukkah was over by December 13th mm-hmm. this year.
Does that matter in Wichita?
I mean, I'm just trying. I'm grasping at straws here, trying to figure out what exactly they mean by maximum carnage at the height of the holiday travel season. So he's been charged with attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction and attempting to use an explosive device to damaged property and attempting to give material support to Al-Qaeda. But since he was essentially being helped in his attempt to be a terrorist by the FBI, it's interesting that the government is like, well, we don't want to show how we investigated this plot or how we interdicted this plot and how, you know, like it says, ability to compromise, the ability to stop future plots. They don't want to compromise that ability, but they're just creating future plots. That's the deal. I mean, it's read this more specifically. Let's translate it real quick. It's not compromise their ability to stop future plots, but they don't want to demonstrate how they have created all these future plots and all these current and past plots too. But this is, I guess, the first time they've done this. Defense attorneys have previously told the court that they would not disclose any information provided by the government, and they tried to assure the judge that they would not disclose the FBI agents' identities, that such professional obligations didn't require a protective order, and they've criticized the government for trying to micromanage the defense with what they call burdensome and intrusive restrictions. But I think it's just, at some point, somebody other than me is going to have to realize that every single one of these terror plots that has been disrupted by the federal government's investigative efforts have been not disrupted, but created by the federal government, created by the FBI. I mean, I can't be the only one to have recognized this. And maybe the judge sealing this evidence is a representation of that somebody is starting to figure this out, or maybe the judge just figured it out. It's like, oh my God, I better seal the evidence on this one. If anyone else figures this out, well, judge, I figured it out too. But luckily for you, I'm on in the middle of the night. And it's 17 minutes after the hour of one, right here on Community Radio in the 21st century. I'm Benjamin. If you want to give us a call, it's 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. I'm going to take a real quick musical break and go get myself some more coffee. And we'll be back with more conversation and your phone calls. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI.
Of age, rituals lost in radios like cowboys leaving rodeos.
sun is falling in the western sky. Wrinkle in a twinkle of his eye.
Song of Lime Juice and Despair, Shiny Ribs, Kevin Russell from the Gourds. He will be in Kansas City at the Folk Alliance, which is an international folk off that'll be taking place later on this month at the Westin Crown Center. So it starts, I believe, on the, I can tell you specifically what day that'll be. Starts on the 20th of this month. That'd be pretty cool. You can find out more information and see the list of all the artists that will be at the 2014 Folk Alliance International Folk Off at Westin Crown Center at folkalliance.org or something along those lines. If you just type it into Google, the NSA will do the rest. Right? Correct. It's what the NSA will do. So, concerning news for people who like to eat vegetables, you like to eat a vegetable from time to time, don't you, Jesse?
Every now and again, when my body tells me I should.
So, apparently, there was actually some really dire news and then a little glimmer of good news. So, California is in an extreme drought. So, this is the third year of a drought. It wasn't until last Saturday that it had rained in California this year.
And it was Fukushima rain, too, right?
Well, let's not talk about that. I don't want to think about that. You shouldn't really think about that either.
Okay.
So, California, the Central Valley of California, that is where all of our vegetables come from. Like, I'm literally reading this article, and they're like, broccoli shortage. Potential broccoli shortage. I don't know what I would do if there was a shortage of broccoli. I'm not like some people. I need my broccoli, man. I need to have some cauliflower, too. You know, some leafy greens? Yes, I need some of those. We're not going to be able to get them if California dries up and shrivels up. I mean, they're literally cutting down, you know, water consumption for the state system of water. See, this is also interesting. It's because Northern California has water. Southern California does not, because Southern California is a desert. Northern Californians want to secede from the, you know, from California. They want to create a whole new state. That's all based upon water rights. Now, on Friday, it rained in California, and it was still raining on Saturday. It might still be raining today, which is good news. I can hear the broccoli growing right now. But what are they going to do? What are we going to do? I mean, this is like another one of those, hey, buddy, you might want to shop local. But the hard part is, if you're a guy that likes broccoli like me, and you go to the farmer's market to get broccoli, there's like 2 months out of the year that you can get broccoli at the farmer's market, and it's kind of expensive, as opposed to that always available, delicious California broccoli that seems as though it grows on trees.
Well, it's
actually more like a little bush.
I know that you said don't talk about it, but you know, all that stuff out there is pretty fucked up.
Oh, that may be true, but what are we going to do? I mean, it's not like...
There's got to be broccoli that grows from somewhere else. I mean, you know...
It's like 2 months out of the year, you could eat it.
It's just like if you go... You look for oranges. You know, I like oranges. That's something I like to keep in my house. But all the oranges you see at the store are either from Central Valley, California, or Georgia and Florida. So I find it very easy to just get the ones from Georgia and Florida. Now, broccoli, I don't know much about. I don't know. There's got to be somewhere else in America that grows broccoli. You're saying there isn't. It seems like if they can grow it in California, why can't they grow it in South Carolina? I don't know.
Get some Floridian broccoli? I don't know, yeah. Man. The Central Valley of California is responsible for 50% of the fresh fruits and vegetables and nuts that we consume in America. You can see how it might cause a problem if the Central Valley of California were to dry up and shrivel into a nothing. It might cause a shortage and raise a couple of prices of food.
Have you looked into maybe getting imported broccoli on Amazon Prime?
Wow. But you know where it would be imported from, don't you? China.
You don't think they grow broccoli in Africa?
They have a food issue in Africa, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they may grow broccoli.
Yeah, because they ship it all out.
They probably should keep it. I don't think I want to support that. You're talking about your oranges. I was buying some clementines, and I always look at where stuff's from, you know. They're from Israel. I was like, I guess I won't be getting these clementines now, will I? It's really too far for food to come from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this time of year, well, a couple months ago, the avocados were from Chile. And they're not nearly as good as Mexican avocados. And I'm assuming it's because of the difference. Because it's not like, I mean, what about Mexico could possibly taste better than Chile, right? It's not some great affinity for Mexico. It's just got to be the geography, the proximity, you know, the amount of travel time. It would be much better to enjoy a nice Mexican avocado. What avocado do you like to enjoy? 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. And, of course, it's the pledge drive is over, so you don't have to be afraid, folks. You don't have to fear that. And thanks to all the people that did throw some of their money into the pool to keep KKFI and the lights on. Thank you so very much for doing so. You still have the opportunity to pledge your support to KKFI, and you always have that opportunity by going to kkfi.org and making a secure online pledge. Now, apparently all the politicians in Japan, all the past prime ministers, the last three, are coming out against nuclear power. Because, I mean, Fukushima is something, it's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have it under control.
They haven't for 3 years.
Since it started, yeah. I mean, Chernobyl, I believe, the Russians got Chernobyl under control. The Japanese have not gotten to Fukushima under control. It is pretty messed up.
Were you just saying that the drought in California has been about 3 years?
Well, there you go. Mr. Conspiracy Theory over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty amazing, though, because what happened with Fukushima is very interesting. Because, essentially, the problem was the power got shut off to the nuclear reactor. So the nuclear reactor makes power, and a nuclear reactor is a very simple idea, really. Radioactive metals like uranium is really hot. I mean, super hot. So they use it to boil water, and the water then turns to steam. The steam runs a turbine, which generates electricity. It's very, very old school technology. Mm-hmm. It's like a steam locomotive or something like that. But when the electricity is not there, they're not able to recirculate the water around this uranium. And then the uranium causes the water to superheat. And then you have, you know, what they had, where you have a breach of the radioactive containment structure. And you have radioactive material getting out into the general environment.
Well, have you seen the maps?
Oh, no, they're immense. They absolutely are. But the idea being that what happened in Fukushima is the power got shut off, and then that sucker melted down. There's nuclear power plants everywhere, all over this country.
There's a few not far from here.
Exactly. All over Europe. They're everywhere. So if the power gets shut off to them, then they're going, I mean, it's just, it's kind of a scary prospect.
Mm-hmm.
All that would have to happen is an ice storm or something like that. Or they, you know, thank God nobody put a nuclear reactor on my side of the street, because I lose power like 3-4 times a year.
I'd say more than that.
But it's just, you know, it's a concerning prospect, no doubt. But then you look at the other side of it. So nuclear power is supposed to be safe, and fossil fuel energy is supposed to be really unsafe. Like Keystone XL pipeline, right? You know, Keystone XL pipeline, they're going to build it. They're going to build it. There's no question about it. They're going to continue to rape and pillage the Alberta.
And most of it's going to be exported because they can't. I was just reading about that. They got the refineries down in the Gulf region, down by like Louisiana and stuff. They can only do a certain amount anyway. And they're saying it's going to be like 110 million barrels a day they're going to be able to, you know, throw down in that thing. And they're only can do, they can only do about half that in the refinery. And most of that's going to be exported. Because I just read a very interesting article about how another fun thing Obama and his administration have done is, you know, as you know, coal is out of fashion now. So they have this black, what is it called? It's a byproduct of fracking. It's like these big mounds of black soot, sort of like coal, but apparently really, really dirty, dirtier than coal, which we've decided not to use here in this country.
Coal?
No, this is not coal. This is something else. I wish I had the article in front of me.
I'm pretty sure coal is still the overwhelmingly, you know, it's most used for a generation of electricity in this country still.
No, according to this article I read, it's not. In China, it is.
Coal. We use coal in this country, coal-fired power plants and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But they're starting to get away from that. And they're starting to export it all. So a lot of the stuff that they've done away with here, the dirty fossil fuels that we've vowed to not use because how dirty they are, we're exporting them instead to countries who will use them. Which is funny to me because we're exporting things like coal to China, but China's one of the biggest coal-producing countries in the world. So I don't understand.
No, America's the biggest coal-producing country in the world. America has more coal than any other country on the planet, they say. Coal and natural gas, that's the number, that's what we got the most of.
It was the shale, that's what it was. From all that shale stuff they're doing up there in Canada, there's this byproduct of that when they break it down that just looks like a big, something you'd see at a stone quarry, just a big black mound of just.
No, the key, if you have not seen it, get on YouTube and check out Alberta tar sands and see the level of destruction that has taken place up there. It's mind-blowing. I mean, it truly is amazing. But, you know, it's interesting. So there was a big conspiracy about Iraq and the invasion of that country and the dethroning and then hanging of Saddam Hussein, in that the conspiracy theory was that Saddam Hussein was interested in trading Iraqi oil for euros or another currency that's not a dollar. And the reason why some people say that America invaded Iraq and dethroned Saddam Hussein was to prevent that from happening, because that's a real big threat. And that sounds kind of simplistic, but it's actually not. And it's actually a pretty rational argument, because the American everything, but most specifically the economy and the value of the dollar, is based upon oil. Because at market in New York or in London, where the vast majority of petroleum is traded, you have to have American dollars to buy that oil. So if China wants to go and buy a bunch of oil, you know, for whatever purpose, they want to import a bunch of oil, they have to use American dollars to get, you know, a significant amount. 90%+ of the world's oil is traded in American dollars. So China can't take, you know, its currency, the renminbi, to London or New York to buy oil. They have to take American dollars. That means that they have to have American dollars. So that makes a demand for American dollars, because if you want to have oil, you have to have American dollars to get it. So you have to have American dollars. There's a demand. People always say, I mean, if you read, you know, the blogs and the websites out there that present an alternative to the mainstream media, there's always those stories. In 2 weeks, trends forecaster says the American economy to explode and implode, and the value of the dollar will decrease and diminish and evaporate. And if you read these, you know, alternative news websites, they've been saying that for over 10 years now, that in about 2 weeks, all signals point to the complete destruction of the American dollar, our currency, our way of life, you know, the women and children. It'll all be over in about 2 weeks. But it doesn't ever end. You know, they can print, the Federal Reserve can print quadrillions of dollars, and it just never seems to end. Credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, quantitative easing, TARP payments and bailouts and all this other, you know, the dilution of the American dollar, you know, the skyrocketing price of gold, all these things happening. And yet the American dollar still buys crap. It's amazing, right? I mean, it truly is amazing. After, you know, it's been 6 years since, well, going on 6 years since the great manic depression of 2008 until question marks began. All this pumping of the economy, the Federal Reserve working overtime, adding zeros to the national deficit and debt, etc. And the American dollar still has value. People have been saying that there's no way it can continue to go on. Well, it continues to go on because people, countries globally need to have American dollars to buy oil, because that's how you do it. Would Russia, would China, would Brazil, would India, would places like Venezuela like to see this end? Absolutely, they would. But right now, the current structure, the economic reality, you need oil imported into your country, you have to have American dollars to do so. And that, because all this pressure that's been put on the dollar by the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing and this financial meltdown, etc., and the general abuse of the economy by unbridled corporate neo-fascists, has created a situation where more stress is being put on. So now America is an oil exporting country for the first time since 1970-something. We export more oil than we import. So we're still importing oil, but now we're exporting more than we used to. So we actually export more than we import. So we're a net export petroleum country. And then you look at all that oil that's coming, you know, the Keystone XL, and how is that going to get to market? Where is that going to go? That exporting of oil is helping keep the American economy going. It's keeping it alive, putting out more product that people will have dollars to buy. So cutting out the middleman of Saudi Arabia or Venezuela, you know, by doing it ourselves to keep the economy going. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing.
Well, so, and I'm sure you know there's a law that oil, natural gas, anything that comes from here, I didn't know about this, I just learned this week, if it's from the United States, it has to be refined in the United States. Like, if it's just, like, you know, crude going through the pipeline, it's, apparently there's a law that was passed years ago that it is illegal to take crude oil and send it overseas to be refined. If it's from the United States or Canada,
I don't know that that's
it
true.
Has to be refined here.
Because most of the oil that comes from Alaska goes to Japan.
Alaska's a different story. Alaska was an exception to the rule.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Alaska and there was and something else too. But yeah. But other than that, anything that's from North America that's pulled out of the ground has to be refined here, which is what that article I was reading was saying about the Keystone XL pipeline, about how they're going to have so much. They're going to have way more coming through that pipeline than they'll have the ability to refine it. And they're not going to be able, because of the law, to send it elsewhere to be refined. So
why wouldn't they just change the law?
They probably will.
Yeah, that's probably what will happen. All right, 20 minutes until the hour of 2, 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. If you'd like to call in to the program. But that's, I think that is something that everyone should really wrap their minds around. That literally the economy of this country is based upon oil. Always has been. Well, maybe not always, but for the last 70, 80 years has been. And will continue to be, to the point where alternative energy sources are a real threat to the economy. You know, going green is a real threat to America because it would diminish the demand for dollars globally. And hell, if TransCanada, the people who are building the Keystone XL pipeline, were to go like, look, America, sure, you have a lot of concerns, and rightly so. All the things that have happened with pipelines and the folks down in Arkansas who didn't even realize they had a pipeline running through their backyard, and then all of a sudden it started bubbling up like a Beverly Hillbilly, you know, because these pipelines that were buried in the backyards and residential neighborhoods, you know, burst, and that oil's got to go somewhere. I mean, sure, TransCanada could say, sure, America, you have concerns. Some of them are environmental, some of them are logistic. But if you let us build the Keystone XL pipeline, which is just going to be a little auxiliary artery off of the already built Keystone pipeline that runs across, you know, this country, runs across the state of Missouri, has a final destination in Illinois. If you let us build it, we will guarantee the gasoline will be $1.25 a gallon.
Hmm.
Who would do it? Yeah, you got a little excited just thinking about that.
Like, huh, I could get a six-cylinder.
$1.25 a gallon, America would happily sell out completely.
Sure.
Willingly. You know, between TransCanada and the Alberta tar sands and all the fracking that takes place. I mean, it's really to the point where you just have to go, huh, we got to trust these energy companies again, or we still do. I mean, just the idea that they're going to follow safety regulations and be good environmental stewards or whatever. It's just, let's be realistic here. Understand what we're dealing with. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You are on the radio.
How's it going tonight, guys?
Pretty all right.
It's Vic.
What's up,
yeah,
Vic?
Yeah, I just think this is Vic. I called a couple of times before. I've missed you guys for a while. I mean, I can remember back when there was a discussion about the intercontinental superhighway that they were going to build from Mexico to Canada that was going to come through Kansas City.
Sure.
And I'm wondering whatever happened to that.
It's...
I mean, I know you guys had, like, an opinion. I guess it was a negative opinion. I didn't kind of know which way to look at it because, I mean, I drive trucks, so I kind of looked at it. It might be positive, might be negative. It's hard to say. But I just noticed that it just went away. And I just wondered what happened. And
well, you know, the NAFTA superhighway, the NAFTA, it hasn't necessarily gone away. And there is still an intermodal transport hub at Whiteman Air Force Base on South 71. I mean, that is still there. I think it's the impetus to get it done has slowed. And it seemed like it was about to happen about 6 years ago. It was just like any moment this is going to take place. And then there's, you know, that financial economic collapse. And then there's been a lot of, you know, other things that have taken place. But from what I understand, that is still generally the plan. And there's the Trans-Texas Corridor, which essentially is what we're doing is we're removing the you know, national borders. You know, the border between Mexico and America, border between America and Canada, for the purposes of moving, you know, goods.
Yeah, because I remember it was a whole lot of talk about a new currency. The Amero was supposed to be something.
Right, the Amero, yeah.
The Amero.
And it seemed like all that stuff just died off. And I was like, okay, was it all just conspiracy theory, whatever, or is that something that they just backed off of, or what's your opinion?
No, I think it's something they've backed off of. And I'm speaking mostly about this idea of the NAFTA superhighway, this intermodal transport hub that is in Kansas City. The Amero, that might be, you know, I can't really speak to that as much. But it seems like because of public opinion and resistance to it, they had to slow it down. Now, is it not going to happen? No, it's still going to happen. They just have to take a different tact or a different method with it, right?
Because I just was curious. I know, I mean, back, I guess, when I first started listening to you guys, I mean, I used to work nights, and I was tired of listening to just the same old songs being played over and over again. So I started listening to you guys, and you had a bunch of interesting conversations. And I remember that was one of the major topics that I thought about. And it just seemed like it all just disappeared. But that's all I was really wanting to just comment on and get your opinion on. Because I know you guys do a lot of checking and a lot of different things, and I just was curious what you might have found about that.
Yeah, we appreciate your phone call, Vic. And what I'll do is I'll do some further research, and we'll bring forth the findings of that live on air.
Okay, thanks a lot. You have a good night. Great show.
Take it easy. All right, 15 minutes until 2, 816-931-5534.
Have you been on the website?
931-KKFI.
Remember there was that website. There was the Animal Health Corridor.
Oh, NBAF.
Yeah, and then it was also had the little KC with the red dot, and then there was the same.
Yeah, Think KC and the Mid-America Regional Council.
And, yeah, and you check those websites out lately.
Well, and the Animal Health Corridor running from Columbia to Topeka.
Yeah, they were going.
Oh, no, Columbia to Manhattan.
To Manhattan,
the,
yeah.
The National Bio-Agro Defense Facility, which is still going to be built.
It was the same company, right? It had this little red dot with the little KC.
Well, that's just one of, the Chamber of Commerce has, you know, some entities that help bring together synergistically these various organizations for the purpose of cooperation.
But what the previous caller was talking about, I know it's still happening in Texas because I hear stories. I have a lot of friends down in Texas. I think the highway's made it. It's somewhere right now between Austin and Waco is about as far as they've gotten. But there's all kinds of stories down there about them taking land away from ranchers and stuff to build this thing.
Let's go back to the phones. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You are on the radio.
You talking to me?
Yep.
Thank you, sir. I've only heard you guys once before. Are you on every night? Why don't you give your hours when you're on.
We're just on Sunday nights.
Oh, just on Sunday night? What time do you start?
Midnight.
Midnight? What time do you go off?
About 5.
5 o'clock. Well, I'll tell you, I listen to all the talk shows, and I find you two are very, very interesting and probably much more well-informed than what you actually come across. You don't get in real deep detail. But my question to you is, I've heard read the same thing on the internet that Salenti, Schiff, Peter Schiff, all these guys, it's all going to collapse. They've been saying this for 10 years.
Yeah, no, well, Gerald Salenti, that's a really good, I mean, in about 2 weeks, the trends forecaster, yeah, Gerald Salenti, says the American economy will implode.
Yes, sir, and he's been saying that for 10 years. But I know you guys know this crap just can't go on forever about this economy and this money printing. Do you guys have some sort of feeling that, you know, do you think that it will collapse in a year, 2 years, 5 years? Or what's your, everybody?
I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I thought it was going to collapse, you know, like 10 years ago. And,
right.
And here we are.
Well, yeah, I know you hear the guys, Paul Craig Roberts, and he's a, you know, very educated guy, and John Williams at shadowstats.com, he, you know, is brilliant, and all these guys, and Paul Craig Roberts, used to be in charge of the Treasury or something for Reagan or somebody.
He did something for
but
Reagan.
He's one. He said, I can't believe it's gone on this far, and that's what several of them are saying, but does anybody have a feeling really for how long this can go?
But the reality of the situation is this, is that people are trying to apply logical or rational thinking to the economy, and you can't do that. So the government has all kinds of indexes that they release that are right. Some are metrics of the economy, and one of the most important ones is known as the Consumer Confidence Index. Now, confidence is also what a con game is, you know, abbreviated for. A con is an abbreviation for confidence. Now, if people have confidence in the economy, that means they're going to go out and spend money they don't have, get credit card debt and home equity loans and all these other things that they don't need, and they're going to stimulate the economy. So we've been told for a long time now, and you remember right after 9/11, George Bush is all like, y'all need to be really afraid of everything, but go out and spend money. Go to Disneyland.
Go to Disney World, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Go spend some cash. Don't mess the economy up because of terrorism. Go into debt and spend a lot of money because, you know, this is what we need. This is what needs to happen. So that confidence game, that con game that Americans are kind of engaged in is global. I mean, everyone's got it, and nobody really wants to play with it. So people say the Chinese could destroy the economy just by asking for all the money that we owe them back. But they
right.
would never do that because right. then they would destroy their reality. The Saudis don't want their money back. They want a bunch of weapon systems and a guarantee that we will fight off anyone that comes near that oil. I mean, yep. So the system is set up to where everyone's kind of bamboozled by it a little bit. Everyone's kind of under the influence of the con game, and nobody's really willing to look any deeper than that into it. And as long as people, you know, are conned and have confidence, blind or whatever, you know,
I don't think they're conning the Russians and the Chinese and a few countries in the Middle East. I think that there must be, those countries must see what's going on and are apparently trying to make plans to protect themselves. Don't
and
you?
You're right about that. And you have what's called the BRIC countries,
right.
Brazil, Russia, India, and China, which have an amazing amount of potential, right? But it's just potential. The reality is that America is still dominates everyone else on the planet economically, militarily. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation still. Will that change eventually? I believe so. I don't think it'll go on forever. I mean, there was a time in which I'm sure a couple of guys were sitting in Rome going, yeah, this is going to go on forever. What do you think, Brutus? Yeah, sure. You know, and then it didn't. I mean, it eventually collapsed under its own weight.
I think maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years, who's to know? Things might change radically for this country, don't you?
Well, we're on borrowed time right now, so.
All right, that's the point I'm getting at. I mean, I can't see. I'm 65 years old.
You're lucky, my friend.
When I grew up, I grew up working. You could go get a job anywhere. And right now, I hear of so many people still losing their homes. I talk to young people when I go out. They're waiters at the restaurants and stuff, and they say, "Oh man, I've been to college. I can't get a job." And like I said, and I was also raised in Detroit. I was born in Kansas City and was raised in Detroit, so I saw an economy when I was growing up. And Detroit looks to me like Detroit's the model city for the America's future.
No, a lot of people say that.
Yep.
And there's some truth to that. And I think that, you know, if you were part of the 1% or the 0.01% and you're looking around going, you know what, we don't need these people anymore. The lower, the blue collar working class, the lower middle class, the middle class, the upper middle class, just going, I mean, do we need these people? If anything, they're just a liability to us because they can participate within the political structure, which we control for the most part, but it's really getting to just be a bother, you know?
Well, let me say one more thing. I hear, Alex, I hear all these guys, we got to change this and we're going to do that. And you know what? We're not going to change nothing. My feeling is this, I hope I live to see it. We're not going to change it. It doesn't matter who you vote for anymore. What's the difference?
No difference at all.
Right. Period. And I say if the crap's going to hit the fan, I wish you'd get to it, and so we could get started and get through it.
Well, Brett, but you know, just like with what happened in 2008, and you had these banks that were told too big to fail. Which is completely anathema to what we're supposed to believe in America as a free market capitalist country, supposedly. In that, if you take a risk and it doesn't pay off, then you fail. That's what happens. If you make a bad decision and it doesn't work, that's called competition. That's called winning or losing. It's a reality of business. Unless you have something that's different.
That's what I don't understand. I've never listened to anybody that talks like you two guys. That's the point, you know. That's exactly how I feel. I've grown up. Okay, this is supposed to be a free society and capitalism. That means that you give it your best shot. If you don't make it, well, then somebody else comes in behind you. But everything is just a scheme anymore. All of it, everything.
No, right. Scam artistry is the new.
This ain't a free country
business anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's quickly changing that way because it's still a free country. But what's happened is this notion of our civil liberties and our political freedoms are quickly becoming tied to money. To where, sure, you have freedom if you can afford it, and if you don't have the bank account to retain a lawyer and have the money to donate to political campaigns to ensure that you have free speech and all these other things. If you don't have the cash, Bubba, then, you know, the whole Constitution thing just ain't for you anymore.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and I'll certainly listen to you on Sunday nights.
All right, good. Looking forward to that.
God bless you, gentlemen.
You take care. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. Because America's still a free country if you can afford the freedom. You know, I mean, that old cliche, freedom ain't free. Now, freedom requires a bunch of campaign contributions, and certainly you have to retain a lawyer. I mean, if you want to be free in America.
A team of lawyers now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, I firmly believe that some things are more important than profit, and justice is one of them. I think justice should be held above, you know, just the simple act of making money, because it's kind of it's that important. It truly is. And, you know, there was a time in which justice was much more attainable for the common man. But it's quickly changing. And, you know, are we on borrowed time? Of course. I mean, you know, we're human beings. We've created our, you know, man-made structures, both physical and political. So, of course, we're on borrowed time. I mean, we're a bunch of human beings. I mean, when the founding fathers of this country sat down to try to fix the Articles of Confederation, and when they ended up birthing the Constitution, like they said, they tried to create something of a more perfect union. More perfect. They weren't going for perfection. Why? Because those were rather intelligent and somewhat wise men who understood that they weren't going to get perfection. All they were going to get was something a little bit closer to it. And that's all you can, I mean, that's really what you're going for, you know, when creating a society or looking at the one that we have right now. And I think a lot about the problems that we have in America. And I think about the way that we have gone so far from this notion of the republic, where people are represented, where we have equal representation under the law, where there is no such thing as mob rule, and everyone, no matter, even if you're the smallest of minorities, has the same access to what we call liberty that people who have all the money and power do. That's what a republic is about. It's about representation, about minority rights. I mean, not just ethnic minorities, but political minorities. But what we don't have is that type of demographic representation. We don't have that. We have the left and the right personified by the Democrats and the Republicans, which are really nothing more than marketing firms for political movements, to where people support President Obama the way they do the Chiefs. The Chiefs have given people nothing but heartache in the last, I mean, what was it, 1970,
69. They won 69. The first Super Bowl. Yeah,
right. Nah, they didn't win the first one. They were in the first one. They won the second one or the third one or something like that. I'm not a big football guy, but I do know this. The Chiefs have given nothing but Kansas City football fans nothing but heartache, but they still defend them. Guys still walk around with their Chiefs jerseys on and, you know, get all excited.